the details, especially with the samatha practice. It does take quite a bit of time to get this particular side of the meditation practice together. It's a very, I would say, quite a sensitive, quite a fragile state of mind that you actually develop on the samatha side. The wisdom, one's wisdom faculty, say from beginning to intermediate to advanced, I'd say it's much, much easier. But the samadhi practice is much more fragile. You actually have to protect it to a much greater degree, you know, especially with the level of sensory input, especially with what the lay disciples have to deal with. And not as much so for the monastics, but when you actually live inside a very protected environment inside the monastery, and then you see what it takes to get really deep states of meditation and actually sustain that, makes you fully aware just how much work you have to do and how careful you actually have to be. With your mind, the kind of sensory, input or impingement. You have to be quite selective about the things that possibly you read or you study because of intellectual stimulation, the kind of people that you talk to, if they annoy you or bring up feelings of aversion, you know, which you can carry for days on end. So all these opposing states of mind, that you find within the samatha practice, and they lie within the realm of the five hindrances. But I won't go into that because it's a subject. It's virtually like a long talk in itself. So, with the five samatha factors on the side of, say, like pure tranquility or peacefulness of mind, so what you actually have is these underlying mental principles which are necessary for you to actually bring the mind together in a unified state, a very, very, firm, relaxed, peaceful state of mind. So many of you are familiar with the five. You know, you're looking at applied attention, sustained attention, joy, piti sukha, and say one-pointedness of mind. So, you know, when I mention these words, you know, what are we actually talking about when you undertake your meditation? So this principle of applied attention, you know, what actually is it when you sit and walk? The application of the mind is, say, the the exertion. It's the pressing, the applying of the mind to the meditation object of your choice. And naturally, you know, there's a half a dozen different tools you can use within the samadhi practice at any time. And each person, they will see which particular technique is most conducive, at any particular session, because your mind is very, very changeable. So you have to keep swapping and changing with different objects to get good results. So applied attention is the first, say, the initial application of the mind. And you know you've got that when you experience the meditation object as a process, as an experience. You know, your awareness like knows that thing, that, you know, that that breath, that sense of loving kindness, that perception of emptiness. You know, there's awareness. Once you lose the awareness, you know that factor is no longer there, because you've lost your meditation object completely. So that's just the initial point. And then the second one is sustained attention. And what that means is by continually maintaining one's focus, continually maintaining awareness of the meditation object that you're using, that's when you can say, you know, you've got sustained application of the mind. And so that's continuous awareness of the breath, of the loving kindness, of any kind of principle of perception, any kind of, say, like method or way of looking at a particular experience. It can be bodily or mental. Meditation is very, very fluid, very flexible. You can manipulate meditation objects. You can manipulate the way you see your experience many, many different ways. So you know you've got applied attention when you have that continuous moment-to-moment awareness of the object you choose for your focus. And then what actually happens over time, naturally takes it could take, so for example, especially you will see this largely on a, say, like a weekend retreat format, or if you're a person who meditates absolute minimum, say 30 minutes to an hour every day, and then you've got you are actually sitting and walking long enough where one's mental energy starts to build with the object, because you know you actually have to apply energy as you focusing on your meditation object. That mental energy starts to build in the mind, and that as that energy like rises up and increases, it becomes you get the experience of say like rapturous feeling, an increase of energy on the mental level, and naturally feelings of, say, of you actually feel physical rapture running through the body. We can actually tie in with the say flow with the chi networks. So, you know, I know a particular person who had a very, very brief but quite quite a very, very strong experience. They were meditating till late, I'd say after midnight, and they started to get a bit dozy, and then they laid down and they kept watching the breath. And they were in like this kind of in-between state where their attention was there on the breath, but they were just incredibly relaxed. You know, just that point before the person loses peripheral awareness and goes into a sleep state. And at that point, the person's mind was so relaxed, the sense of letting go was so strong, that they just got this full flow, like this energy rush from the chi points in the soles of the feet right up through the body for not an incredibly long period of time, maybe possibly definitely well under 10 seconds, you know, roughly. It could be absolute minimum 7-8 seconds plus, and it was like they described it like actually being plugged into the universe, so actually feeling the full force of the energy within say the natural world, being able to actually pass through your physical body, and then you know with that flow state, that energy flow, moving up through the body and then up through the spine, and then actually reaching the mind, and then the mind exploding into light. So you know you've got that correlation where the letting go is so strong that you basically induce a very, very like a bright nimitta state, which would be like a preliminary to say upachara samadhi. So very, very strong nimitta, just blinding white in the mind, and just the mind exploding. With the effect of this nimitta, and then that experience, 7-8 seconds plus. There was so much energy. That person, they couldn't sleep. They got up and they sat meditation for, minimum, they said like two and a half, under 3 hours, and then they slept for 2 hours and then got up and went about their daily routine, and there was just no fatigue. So that's quite a good deal, for very, very short energetic experience, and the mind is just so bright with this kind of energy. So that's the energy that you can get with very, very deep samadhi, at least the initial stage. You know, if you're able to sustain a samadhi nimitta in the mind, then you really understand how much energy you can actually generate within meditation, and what the experience of the mind element is as you move through that stage. So with those very, very with this rapturous experience, people move through, so like five stages of rapturous feeling, you know, from very very sort of gentle, you know, feelings running through the surface, towards the surface of the body, to the fifth stage, where you just got full body energy flow. You know, you're still aware of your peripheral senses. There's still full awareness, but it's something similar to the, say for example, people who do the Kundalini yoga, and they're able to actually open, open the Kundalini at the base of the spine, and you get this, you open the chakras up, and you get this full energy rush. It could be, you know, you can look at it from that angle in relation to Kundalini yoga. You can look at it from the angle of, say, Tai Chi or Qi Kung. You know, there's a number of practices which relate to that kind of experience. So with these rapturous feelings you go through as you pass through, say from the first stage through to the fifth, you know, once you reach the fifth stage, the mind becomes, that experience becomes very refined, the bodily and mental experience quite refined, until the point where you experience you start to touch on feelings of bliss, which is much more pronounced on the mind because of the refinement of the state. It's a very pronounced mental state, and then when a person starts to experience the mental bliss, usually find that they've either very, very close, or they've got the nimitta actually in the mind's eye, and the actual pitisukha, that very refined happiness, actually draws you in, actually draws you into the mind, into what they might call full concentration, or say like full unification of mind. So you're using your initial object, especially loving kindness is very good to induce that kind of state. The breath, they're both very refined objects. Some people can do it with the hard cooking practices, like the very coarse objects, like things like death, contemplation of death, and the body contemplation. But you usually find that people, they've got to have some kind of propensity, some kind of disposition. It's quite possible they could have developed that as a skill in maybe possibly the past life or the one before. So when they work with that object again, they can get quite good results with it. Even though some people may find it quite coarse in nature, these people they can get very, very strong feelings of joy and bliss occurring in a very short period of time. So that last factor, that gathering together, that unification is where the one's attention gets, like through the sheer power of the bliss, the seductiveness of the bliss gets drawn in. One's mental attention gets like drawn into the mind, drawn into oneness, what the Christians might call unification of God, or what the Muslims might say like oneness with Allah. You know, they may describe it as a very a very personal so like God-orientated kind of experience, but in reality it's a mind experience, very pure, blissful mind experience, but they may personalize it with their, you know, with the God of their choice. And, you know, you see this this kind of experience in virtually all the major religions of the world. You know, they have an understanding of this state, but they describe it in a different way. So what we'll do is start with the because I want to put a bit of emphasis on the sustained attention. This is something I've had to pay more attention to lately. I was using a very broad focus for about 5-6 years, but the samadhi just wasn't strong enough. So what I want you to basically do is to, within the meditation, as we move through the meditation, is to sustain attention continuously on the breath or the loving kindness. I'll just talk you through the format. And because in order to really suppress the hindrances, in order to get this mind quiet, you're going to have to use a degree of, say, like comfortable force, you know, possibly, especially at the beginning stage, to the intermediate. If you can't let go of the thinking process very easily, you know, you have to sustain attention to really get this mind quiet, and use your wisdom practices as like a higher principle to problem solve, to remove obstructions. But it's good to see, how quiet you can get your mind by this continual application. So, because the breath and the loving kindness, they are the best ones to work with. You know, if you're looking at the samatha practice, we'll spend most of our time on that, and we'll just sort of do a variation on a theme as we move along. And so what we'll start with is just with the beginning instructions, just get yourself in a comfortable position with your back upright, head upright but comfortable. Make sure you can breathe into the full chest, and there's nothing tied around the throat, the waist, knees, and around the elbows. And we'll start with the loving kindness, say for at least five to 10 minutes. So what I want you to do is, with this kind of approach, do with the mantra formulation. We use a mantra formulation of your choice, using keywords which are important to you, and then you do the mantra continuously, with absolutely no spaces between the words. So with the approach, so with the standard metta approach, we use the formula, say for oneself. Actually, probably a good idea, I think it'll work quite well. We'll do the full range. We'll move from oneself, and we'll go out to all beings, and then we'll couple it with the breath, and that will give you the best results, the best feel, because you want to be able to induce those feelings of joyfulness and bliss, hopefully. So choose the positive words which are suitable for your character. May I be happy, successful, confident, blissful, joyful in nature. May I be wise, skillful, patient. It can be anything you like. You know, you may even wish to be popular and incredibly successful in life. You may wish to be fabulously wealthy. You know, there's nothing wrong with using these particular, say, positive affirmations. So, may I be such and such. You can use a single word, you can use a string of words, but with your mantra formulation, do it very relaxed, very gently, continuously, for the next 10 minutes. So, formulation is, may I be such and such. Just silently in the mind. So now I want to use the breath meditation. I want you to watch the breathing cycle between the throat and the belly button. Just watch the breath in a full chest section. And then we'll increase the range of the loving kindness. So choose a person who's close to you, a close friend, and whatever good qualities you wish for that person, just adjust your mantra format accordingly. But as you keep the mantra going continuously in a relaxed way, I want you to focus on both the mantra and the breath meditation in the full chest together, roughly for the next 10 minutes. you still find you have thoughts intruding into the meditation process, just stop for at least 15 to 20 seconds or so and examine that particular thinking process, that mood, and come to an understanding of that, something which needs to be addressed or worked out. And because as you investigate this kind of slightly disturbing phenomena, it tends to relax and the mind settles down at least to a small degree. So with the loving kindness, I want you to now go out to a neutral person, somebody you neither love nor hate. Just a person you feel maybe just quite neutral, ambivalent towards. And whatever good qualities you wish for that person, please do so, you know, maintaining the sustained attention. But now with the breathing cycle, I want you to narrow it down and drop down to the abdomen and watch the sensation of breathing at the level of the abdomen as you keep this loving kindness going continuously. So we'll take the metta out a bit further. If you can choose a person that you say dislike to a small degree, not necessarily you hate or can't stand them, but maybe a person that you don't necessarily get along with or see eye to eye. So whatever good qualities you wish for that person in their personal life, please do so, and narrow the breath meditation down to the periphery of the mouth. So as you just focus on the lips around the mouth and watch the breathing cycle right on the edge of that focus. It's quite a comfortable focus, it doesn't give you excessive tension in the face or between the eyes. And keep the mantra going continuously together for the rest of the session. As this loving kindness gets stronger, just see if you're able to place your attention on that feeling of metta that you've been generating. So we're coming towards the end of the session. So just reflect back, see if you see any change in the peacefulness in your attitude towards yourself and towards others. And I'll ring the bell 3 times and you can open your eyes when you're ready. Anybody have any questions on the meditation at all? Okay, we'll finish up.